And with that, I'm going to introduce our speaker, which is Daniel T. from Santa Maria.
My name is Daniel. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you again for letting me come up here and speak. I actually came up to her after the meeting the last month and was like, hey, can I speak up here sometime? Because I want to feel a part of, right? And then later on, my mind's like, no, what are you doing? Why would you do that, you know? But that voice, that negative voice, is not as loud as it used to be, you know? It's the disease. It's in my mind, and it tells me, you know, it used to just, that's all I used to would hear, you know, I would just hear that voice. I want to welcome the newcomers. If you guys didn't identify tonight, thank you for being here. You guys help us out. You know, you keep us sober. And you know, this is not what I used to look like when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would never tuck my shirt in. I would wear like parachute pants and like, you know, and I wouldn't have nice shoes or anything like that. So I'll get into that story later. But I mean, my day to day, I had an awesome day. I got to hang out with my stepdaughter and my fiance and the brother-in-law. He's this 15-year-old monster of a kid, and we played basketball. And now I'm hurting, you know. You know, but I had fun though. I was able to have breakfast with my family, and you know, that's a spiritual awakening, you know, to me. It's like an educational variety spiritual awakening. I can look back on it and be like, you know, it's not what I did. That's not what I used to do. I would never want to get up here and speak from a podium and feel, you know, comfortable, okay with doing it. I was always that kid in school full of fear that wanted to just, you know, get up there and get it over with, you know, or not even want to do it at all. So I'll I'll get into my story, which is, I do want to mention the doctor's opinion, because I really like the doctor's opinion. So it's one of my favorite parts is he sees these two alcoholics that come to him, and they say, is there anything you can do for us to help me get sober, keep us sober, like, was there a cure? And he says, no, the only cure to alcoholism is complete abstinence. You know, to have a better life is to, you know, work this thing called the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, have this, you know, spiritual awakening. And so what that's about is if you go through the 12 Steps, you have this awakening, the obsession is lifted, and they started seeing the world differently, and I started seeing the world differently, and that's how I look at the world now, you know, completely different than how I used to be, which was selfish and self-centered and dishonest, full of fear, you know, self-seeking. All those character defects just, you know, run riot. And so in the very beginning, my earliest memory is, you know, of stealing. I remember stealing from my family members. I think I was like 5 years old. I would crawl through the house during the night and go to my dad's wallet and steal money. Because for some reason I knew that money, you know, it made me feel good to have money. Because I guess you could get things with money. And those are some of my earliest memories, because I would use that to fill the spiritual malady that I have inside, this hole of not being connected to any other higher power, not being connected to anything else at all, you know. And that made me feel well for a little while until I found alcohol. And part of my story also is I'm epileptic. I take medication to not have seizures, and I'll share this. My brother, he saved my life when I was a baby. He was 5 and I was 1, and you know, my mom was giving me a bath, and she had to take a phone call, and she said, "Can you wash your brother?" And he's like, "Okay." So I started turning blue in the tub, and he held me out of the water, and he saved my life. And you know, I treated him really, really poorly when I was using and drinking. And since then I've made amends, and I'm going to make a lifelong amends to him. The amends basically was like, just stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and it's all good. And so I'm like, all right, you know, so that's what I'm going to do. Actually, all of my amends, they just wanted me to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'll get to more of those later. when I get into this, my experience with the steps. But shortly after that, I started drinking. I think my first drink was I was 12 years old, and it was to feel a part of, because I found that alcohol turned down the volume in my head and made life more tolerable. It did make me feel a part of. That's one of the main reasons why I drank. I was full of self-centered fear. I cared about what people thought about me, and I wanted everybody to like me, and I wanted to have friends. I saw all the popular kids, and I was like, why am I not like them? Why do I feel like I'm standing in China with a map of America? I didn't have these tools. I was spiritually sick. And so my first drink, I felt awesome. I felt a part of. I didn't feel like that little kid. This actually happened to me. I had my parents invited all these children over from school that really, really weren't my friends at all. They were just kids, and they invited them over, and I still felt alone. It was my birthday party. I still felt alone. And so alcohol became my new friend, and it solved that solution. Alcohol is an answer to alcoholism. It cured that for me, but eventually it stopped working altogether. But I started drinking. I started isolating and drinking by myself. That's pretty much what happened. And I'm like in my room drinking, and eventually I started using. That's part of my story as well. I'll try and make sure to say alcohol, because it's Alcoholics Anonymous. But drugs and other substances are a big part of my story. But I'm like a young boy, and I'm drinking alone, isolating, going to school, and it's working for now. But one day I get in a lot of trouble. I think what happens is it's been so long ago, I have trouble remembering everything. But I would get, my parents would, they were really involved in my life, and I played a lot of sports and stuff like that. So they were always there. So they probably knew something was wrong, because I remember, my father, this is my family. My father taught he coached all my teams. They were always there for everything. And, I did well in sports as well. But I always felt like I had to be the best. And when the opportunity came for me, because I got hurt, when that came, I was like, all right, I'm just going to stop playing altogether, because I don't want that pressure of having to, perform all the time perfectly. And so, that's one of the things that happened. So they started noticing that I was doing things. My mom used to describe it as, she used to have this knot in her stomach. She knew something was wrong, but didn't know what exactly was wrong. And so as they started bothering me, I think I would get violent and punch holes in the wall and break things. And this is at me as a young boy. And it's funny, because if in Bill's story, he says all these, my story is kind of like his. There's a beginning where it's horrible, and then another half where it's horrible. But I remember in his story, he says all these horrible things in one paragraph, and then he ends it, and then the very next paragraph is gradually things got worse. So in my story, that actually happens. So now I'm because I'm violent, I get arrested as a young boy. I go to juvenile hall, and I do the small amount of time, get put on a diversion program, and I go to these classes, right? They don't send me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They send me to relapse prevention classes and other things along the lines of that. And there's nothing wrong with going to those classes. If that's what you you guys like to do or want to do, then I encourage you to do it. But it didn't work for me. And so I went to those classes, and eventually I got off the probation, I got off everything, and I didn't want it, so I went back and started drinking again, because it was my solution. maybe it'll be different this time, right? And that talks about, we don't have this mental defense against alcoholism, It's in the book, it talks about the stove. Maybe it won't burn me this time. You know, it'll be different this time. Or for me, it was like, the best way I can describe it is I remember as a kid, I was walking through the dark and I smashed my toe and like hurt it really badly. And from then on out, like I always turn the lights on. That's my mental defense. I don't have that for alcohol. Or, you know, it's just not there. You know, once I start, I don't know when I'm going to stop. And, you know, next time I could pay the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, I do a lot of H&I, and I've seen people come in, and they gradually get worse. Like, one of my past sponsors would always, you know, talk about, like, the hopelessness and, it's a killer. I've seen people come in to, like, the detoxes, and then they don't come, I don't see them again ever again. But each time they come in, they're, like, either, like, in a, they're, like, kind of, like, you know, having a hard time walking in, or next time they have, like, a little stroller and then a wheelchair, and then one guy, last time I saw a guy, he slit his throat, and he had jaundice, and he was yellow, and then I never saw the guy again. And what happens is they go out, they do the program, but for some reason they're not, and they're willing, but not completely honest. And so they end up going back out again. It's, you know, honestly, open-mindedness and willingness. And, you know, I've been honest, you know, in my step work. And so, you know, I eventually to get back, I started drinking and using again. Immediately, I get into trouble again. Once again, this time, and I'm still like a young boy. I think I'm like 15, 16, and this is like in high school and stuff like that. And you know, I'm going to school hungover and stuff and things like that. I remember one of my best friends died from an opiate, and he was drinking. He basically threw up and choked on his vomit, and then his mom came in the next morning and found him dead. And he was one of my best friends too, and I was like, I'm never ever using those drugs ever. But you know, I love to drink alcohol and use opiates. That's my thing. And you know, so I do all these classes, I do everything, and I get off the probation eventually, and I remember the second time I got arrested is because I beat up my brother. I hurt him physically, and this is a man that, like, you know, he never pushed me around, and as a kid, he never was mean to me. He's the closest thing to best brother that you could have, you know. Same with my family members too. If you could, you know, make a template for, you know, a perfect, you know, parents, they would be the closest that you could get to it. And so, you know, I do all the classes and the programs and everything like that, and I get off it, and I immediately go back and I start. It's like this mental twist. It's gonna be different this time. You know, like I talked about the mental defense. And like I said earlier, like when I start drinking, I don't know when I'm gonna stop. It's about control and choice. I have no idea when I'm gonna stop. It could be like loss of job, family, going to prison, death, and I'll still end up going to the bottle. It's like that's the insanity there. And so, you know, I get off probation, and I continue what I'm doing, right? And the next thing that happens is, now I'm an adult, and I'm like, you know, living at home still. I'm like one of those unwelcome hanger-oners that it talks about in the book. I don't really contribute anything to the household at all. My mom, like, she comes in and she doesn't know what to do because I'm sleeping in until like 4 p.m., you know, in the afternoon. She ends up pouring a glass of water on me. So I wake up, I chase her out of my room, and I push her into the door. And so now I get arrested for a violent crime, and I go to big boy jail, and I stay there for a little while at first. I'm like 19. I get out, and you know, I hope if some of you haven't gone, you know, experienced, you know, jail or done anything like that, just listen to the feelings and try and identify. But it is that is part of my story. But so I get put on now. Now it's not like 3 months or 6 months. It's like 3 years of probation. But still, they don't send me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They just give me these, like, you know, drug testing programs and stuff like that with your colors. And so I did that, and I was going to the classes once again to learn about, you know, I just wasn't going to Alcoholics Anonymous at all, and I'm not really sure why they didn't send me there. But I did everything else I was supposed to do, but I couldn't stop. You know, I'm on probation, and I can't stop at all. I'm trying to stop. And Bill Story talks about how he knows something's wrong, and he can't figure it out really. Basically, it's powerlessness. I didn't know what that word meant, but I knew I was powerless and my life was unmanageable because I couldn't stop. I couldn't keep a job. My parents didn't really, you know, I was just, you know, kind of just a leech at home. And I kept getting arrested and going to jail. And, you know, it's like my solution, but now it's just becoming problems, and it's kind of working, and it's not fixing that spiritual malady. And the obsession is just like, it's just on me. It's like, even if I had enough and I was good, I would still be thinking about it. I'd be like, how am I going to get some tomorrow? How am I going to get some the next day? What am I going to do to get it? It's like, I guess I, you know, it's like, you, I'm not really, it's like a nightmare. I'm not really ever really enjoying it because it's only like, I get what I get, and then I go back and try and find more. And I don't complete that probation because I continue to go in and out of jail. And I eventually go, and I do a fair amount of time in jail. And they say, all right, you can either go do a lot of time, or you can go to a 6 month rehab. So I'm like, all right, I'll go to the rehab. And so this rehab's up in the Bay Area. It's in Santa Cruz, and I'm actually turned 20 in jail, so that was a fun experience. But, you know, it was kind of sad. So I'm 20 years old, and I'm leaving the home for the first time. And, like, normal kids, when they leave the home, they go to, like, college, right? Or they go, you know, they go out, study abroad, but I'm going to rehab, you know. And I get up there, and once again, I didn't learn any. I didn't listen. I wasn't listening to anything. I guess I still didn't want it at all. I got the sponsor. I remember doing some kind of step work, but it wasn't nothing like I would do here and when I first got sober in Santa Barbara 6 years ago. It was nothing like that at all. It was. And I would remember it because I remember clearly the first time I did the step work in Santa Barbara, you know, it was Searle, and it was honest. Up there, I like I said, I didn't want it, and I ended up getting a girlfriend. And so now I'm using her to fix that malady that I have, right? And, you know, I complete the program, and I'm doing other programs as well, like the Batters program because I have a violent crime. And eventually me just sober and not working any program, not helping other human beings, not being of service to alcoholics, or just doing God's will. I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm full of fear. I'm dishonest. I'm angry. I get violent. I'm mean. And so she ends up leaving me. And so now I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? I end up finishing up my program up there. And, you know, I treated her pretty poorly up there. And that was like my first girlfriend. I didn't know, like, how to have a relationship at all. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's taken me like 6 years of learning. And, like, you know, so many years of wiring isn't going to be undone in, like, a day. You know, it's like those promises, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I think they're slow. They're slow for me, you know, because I think maybe my higher power is a little slow, like me. So, you know, but he's always been there for me. He's always taken care of me. You know, I've seen tons of miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you know, I end up. So like I said, she breaks up with me, and I have no solution, and I'm like, well, I'll just finish up my program up here, and I was up there for like a year and a half. I was up there for a while. I was living at the sober living there on the rehab, the residential. And so I leave there and go back home, right? And I stay sober for, I would say, like 2 years. I think it's 2 years. I got a job. I worked night crew. You know, I got my license. I was doing good, so I thought, you know, but I was just like a dry drunk. I felt like a shell of a person. I didn't have any friends. I wasn't, all I was doing was just working and going home and sleep, because I worked night crew. So I'd go work night crew and then come home and sleep. And, you know, I stayed sober for a little while, but I hated my life. Got to the point where I just kind of wanted to die. You know, like I said, I didn't know how to socialize, and I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I'd say something like, you know, I try and make friends. Like, I remember clearly one thing, I asked some other dude that I worked with, hey, you want to like hang out and go, maybe go to church or something like that? And he's like, no, I don't really want to do that, but I mean, we could go do something else. I'm like, all right. Like, I just didn't have these tools to like socialize with other human beings. And I mean, I remember that. It was kind of funny, the look on his face. I mean, we're good friends today, but you know, that's just how I tried to socialize with other human beings. It just came out all weird. And so, you know, I'm at home and I'm doing that, and I started to drink again. But before I started to drink, I wanted to, like I mentioned earlier, like in the big book, it talks about, like, throughout the whole book, it says you'll make a new friend, you'll find friends. And I really honestly think that, like, when they wrote it 80-something years ago, they knew that, you know, most of us don't really feel a part of in this world, and we need, you know, we have a desire to feel, a strong desire to feel a part of and feel loved. So, you know, I was like, well, I want to go make some friends, you know. I'll go back and try Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so I go, and like, here I am sober. Like, for some reason, I remembered to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, because they had them at the rehab in Santa Cruz. So I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I identify as a drug addict in the meet, because I got called on, and like, some dude cuts me off and is like, no, you got to identify as an alcoholic. And so right then I get a resentment, and I'm like, well, you know, screw Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm never going back there again. I'm just gonna go, and I'm gonna go to church instead and go to Bible studies, because I have friends that actually do that, and they've been sober for years, but that didn't work for me. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. If that's what you want to do, then I encourage you to do it. It, like I said, it just didn't work for me, because I would go to church. And I would go to the Bible studies and meet, like, friends and have, you know, have the fellowship. And I would leave there forgetting one of a really important spiritual principle, which is faith without works is dead. Like, I have the faith, but I'm not doing the works, you know, or even, like, if I don't do the work, then I don't have the faith, right? So what that looks like is I'm leaving there thinking of self. I'm not helping any other human beings. I'm not doing any service work. I'm not doing what God wants me to do. And that's my higher power. You know, it could be whatever for, you know, for newcomers, it can be whatever you want. But I choose to be called God. And so, you know, now I'm just, you know, like I said, I hate my life, and I'm not doing anything with it at all. I'm just working. You know, I got my license. I'm not really participating in anything at all. I go to work, go home, work, home. And I tried to go to church. I tried to go to AA. And so I'm like, well, it's been a few years, so now I'm not an alcoholic. So I eventually start drinking again. You know, I tell my parents, and they're like, all right, well, you know, just, you know, they weren't totally upset, but they were like a little worried, you know. I'm like, well, I'm 21, it's okay. That was my excuse. That was the reasoning. That's what my mind came up with. It's like, I'm supposed to drink. It's, you know, I'm an adult, you know. And so I start drinking, and immediately it just goes back to the same thing. I'm just drinking alone, and I'm just destroying myself. I immediately go to, like, the hard drugs now while I'm drinking, too. Some of the things that I do are, like, I'll black out, get in the car, drive somewhere, you know, get alcohol, drive back, or even, like, and the things I remember are, like, clipping cars, like, doing hit and runs, and getting, you know, like, and this last time I didn't get arrested. For a minute there, I was, like, I would hate my life so much that I was like, God, could you just, like, kill me or help me get arrested so I could stop, you know, drinking and using. And, you know, I didn't get arrested, but it just went on like that for a while. So now, like, I was epileptic, so it got to the point where when I drink, I forget to take my medication, so I have seizures. So now I'm driving without taking my medication. I'm waking up on the floor from having a seizure. I'm waking up in my mom's arms. I'm waking up in the hospital. I'm ODing. Waking up, like, I don't know, like, one time my father woke me up because I was, like, in the bathtub, you know. And I'm just doing these crazy things. And my parents are watching their son just, you know, destroy himself and just wither away. I felt like a shell of a human being. And, you know, then it gets gradually worse, you know. I fall asleep on my left leg, and it cuts circulation off, and it becomes completely numb, and it causes, like, foot drop, so I could, like, move my foot, like, just a little bit, you know. And, like, neurologist said, hey, so you'll probably never walk again ever, like, because I would hobble around. So, like, you'll probably never walk the same ever again. You probably won't get that feeling back ever. I was like, all right, whatever, you know. And what did I do? I just went back home and started drinking again. And, like, I can walk fine now today, and that's kind of like, that's a perfect example of a godsend, something I didn't do. I didn't do anything to deserve it, but I was given the function back in my left leg. And then it keeps getting worse after that, though. I have a seizure at work, and I physically hurt another employee. But that one is, like, I had a seizure. He woke me up, and I woke up in a blackout. And I guess I chased, he was trying to, like, help me out. But I hurt him, and the only thing I remember of that day was, like, running through it was at a grocery store, I was running through the store, grabbing, like, random things from the store, and I couldn't control my body. It was like something else took control of my body, and it was like a nightmare. And so, next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in a chair and I'm, like, completely sweaty because, like, you know, three other employees were, like, trying to, like, you know, help me. And if I had left early, then I probably would have maybe killed somebody. And the other thing is, I lived in a family neighborhood. And, like I said, like, I drove a stick shift car. So you need your left leg for the clutch, right? And it's being completely numb, and I still need to go get my solution. I don't care about anybody else. I don't care if anybody dies. It's gonna be okay. I just didn't care. That's all I wanted, was to feel a part of. And now the alcohol and everything else wasn't working, wasn't doing it for me. I couldn't get. I mean, I could get drunk, but it wasn't quieting the mind. Like, like the disease for me, it's like, it'll say things like, hey, you're stupid. Why did you say that? You shouldn't have said that. That person doesn't like you. You know, things like that to me, like negative things. And it's really loud. It's not like that anymore today. But in my, you know, for me, like, I focus on the negative sometimes, but then I have the tools today now to be like, why am I wasting my energy foolishly on thinking about that? You know, I have these tools to just, it's kind of, what I do is I just kind of shoo that thought away and say the fear prayer and then move on. and do what I'm supposed to be doing. And so, you know, the next thing that happens is, I guess I mentioned I was having the seizures and everything like that. I had a blackout and I hurt my father physically now. And, you know, I put bruises on him and hurt him. And this is like, you know, this is my hero. Like, he's the guy that was always there for me and saved my life. You know, like, would always, like, he would pay for me to go do things, like, you know, go do sports. He would play sports with me. He'd work a lot, but he would still, you know, take time out of day to spend with me and my brother. And through this, like, I never got arrested. You know, it was weird, but I knew there was something wrong now, so I was like, well, I can't do this anymore. I'll try AA one more time. I'm gonna go. What ended up happening is I had this doctor that was kind of like Silkworth in the Big Book, and in the doctor's opinion, she said she would see me and be like, hey, you know, I can't do this with anymore. I can't help you. You know, I suggest you go to AA and go to maybe go to the detox at 5 East in Santa Barbara, and then go to the CRC and do AA and talk to alcoholics, because we're uniquely qualified to help each other out, right? And so, because there's been so many times where I've told my sponsor something, like all my sponsors I've had over the years, you know, because I've had some move, I've moved away, you know, it's like I tell them something that I think is just horrible, and they're like, oh yeah, well I did that too, you know, it's not a big deal, and it's like, what? I can't believe you did that too, because the disease will also tell me you're no one's ever gone through that before, and you're the only one. And so the doctor, I said, all right, I'll go try this. I'll go try AA, you know, I'll go do the detox and all that. And then if it doesn't work out, then hopefully I'll just come back. I'll just go back to doing what I was doing, and hopefully I'll die. And so I go to the detox, and I've been down to Santa Barbara twice. This was the second time I went there, but I left my job and went down there. And I remember my dad dropped me off there for the last time, and like I was in there for a couple of days, and he calls me up and he's like, hey, why am I missing like $80,000? I'm like, I gave him some like ridiculous excuse, and he's like, you know what? Because what I did is I used his accounts on his, maybe I shouldn't say this, but whatever. I would get his checkbooks, and I would use his accounts to pay my online bill pay, right? And so I did that, and he's like, you know what, just you're worthless. Good luck with your life. I don't ever want to talk to you again. And just hung up the phone on me. And got to the point where, like, every time I'd call somebody in my family, they'd be like, they answer the phone with like, like, what is it this time? And so no one was talking to me, and I'm sitting in detox. I'm at 5 East, and, you know, they end up sending me to CRC for the second time. And in there, I wanted to, like the first night I was there, I ended up wanting to commit suicide. So I went to, I just wanted to just die. And so they sent me back to the detox, and they sent me to some other place in LA. And so I did this program in LA, and eventually my father started talking to me again. He was like, hey, because he got all his money back, so I'm left with like $80,000 in debt, but which I've paid off since I got sober. It's a miracle that I was able to do that. But he starts talking to me, and he's like, hey, you know, you can't come home, like, ever, but I'm not going to let you be homeless, so I'll drop you off at Sober Living. I think Sober Living is actually considered homeless by law, but so I don't guess he didn't know that. But he picked me up, dropped me off there, and my sobriety date was like, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. And I got there, and the first thing they said to me was, are you willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober? I'm like, yeah, you know, like, all right, we got to get a sponsor. And so I ended up getting a sponsor. And this guy was not the guy that, like, I wanted to, like, hang out with or whatever. I'd call him up, and I'd be like, hey, and he'd answer the phone. He wouldn't even say good morning. Like, my sponsor now says, hey, good morning, Daniel, like, in a nice, soothing voice, like, yeah, how you doing? This sponsor would respond with, do you have that fourth step done? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, we have nothing to talk about, then we do we. And like he just like hang up the phone, and I'm like, all right, we're gonna put Chester on there like for the seventh time. I'm like, I'm gonna show this guy, right? And you know, I don't sponsor people like that, but I guess for some reason I truly believe that's who God put him in my life. My higher power put him in my life because he was not the person that I wanted, like I really wanted to have sponsor me. He was someone that like I guess I needed. Because he did show me love by taking me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we went through, you know, one, went through, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like I was powerless and my life was unmanageable, you know, and I have always believed in a higher power. And so we get to step three, and I do all the reading with him, and then we read the third step prayer. I really like the third step prayer. It's one of my favorites. And he's like, all right, we're gonna pray. And I'm like, this is at the Junkyard Dogs meeting in Santa Barbara. It's a big, no, this was at the Men Without Legs meeting. It's an even bigger meeting. And I'm like, we're gonna get on our knees and pray. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I did that. I did the prayer with him. And I didn't feel any, like, there was no spiritual awakening, like it says in some people have these spiritual awakenings and stuff like that. They feel the presence of God. I didn't feel that. But I look back on my life now and I see these educational, spiritual awakenings that I've had. Like, just wonderful things that have happened in my life. Like, I mean, I'll share in a minute my awakenings that I've had, some of them. But, you know, we get to the fourth step. I do all the four step, the inventory. And, like, I'll tell you right now, everybody thinks it's like a beast of a step. It's not that hard. I can do it, you know, if I just sit down and do it. There's something magical about putting, you know, pen to paper or pencil to paper. And then I got to the fifth step and I did it with my sponsor, and he said, I didn't really want to do it. I think I had like 502 resentments, something like that. So I was like really thorough. Like I went all the way back to kindergarten, you know, and maybe in hindsight I shouldn't have done that, because I guess you're supposed to transfer those names onto like the men's. But anyways, I do the step work with him. I do the fifth step with him, and he's like, well, do you feel like you're going to be like judged here? I'm like, yeah, I do. And he's like, well, I'll tell you my worst one. And he told me his worst one, and I'm like, wow, that's exactly like what mine is. And so I continued. I did the fifth step with him. We got to the sixth and seventh step. And I like the sixth and seventh step because it's like, you know, I'm asking God to, you know, remove these defects of characters. Like my defect of characters, my character defects are, I'm, you know, selfish, I'm impatient, I'm inconsiderate, and like I'm still working on that today at 6 years sober. I'm still working on it, but it's like weightlifting. If you imagine that your higher power is your spotter, and you're like lifting weight, he's not gonna do all the work for you. For me, you know, like I gotta take the actions in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the solution. It's our answer. We have the solution, and you know, that means I have to wake up. I have to pray. I have to meditate. I have to, because if I wake up and I don't do those things, then really what I'm doing is just thinking about self. It's like I roll out of bed and I'm like, okay, what do I have to do today? I need to get this done for myself, and I need to do this and this and this. And no, like, if I take my time and get up and say, okay, I pray, can you put someone in my life to be of service to help? What can I do for you? You know, how can I be the best Daniel that I can be? And usually when I do that, I have an awesome day. When I don't do that, you know, it's not a good day. I have to restart my day, and I'm like, what's going on here? It's like, oh, you all you did is thought about yourself in the beginning. And so, you know, I went through all the rest of the steps with him. And like, the program's about action. So my buddy likes to share this. It's like, if a doctor were to say, hey, you know, you have high blood pressure, I recommend you go to the gym and better yourself. So like I go to the gym and I sit in the lobby and I drink the Gatorade and eat the power bars, and then go back. And he's like, what's wrong? You're worse off than you were before. It's like, well, I went to the gym for 30, 90, whatever, how many days I did. I went to the gym. He's like, well, did you go and use the machines? And did you go up the stairs and use the ellipticals and the machines and all that? And did you take the actions? But no, I didn't. So, you know, I look at my program like that. I take the actions in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I get to the men's process and I do all my amends, and my amends basically were like, are living amends. You know, for the women I hurt, you know, I leave them alone. They're better off without me. You know, they're doing just fine. You know, right now by themselves or whatever they're doing in their life. And so, you know, and I made amends to my bosses, my father, my all my family members, and they're like, just stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm like, okay. And, you know, by the time I got to the 12th step, that obsession was lifted, like it says in the doctor's opinion. And I had that psychic change, right? So I started seeing the world differently. I started secretarying meetings. Man, this time goes by real quick. So I started secretarying meetings and being of service and helping other alcoholics. And it's like, I'm living in sober living now, and I'm starting to do stuff like this. I'm sponsoring guys, like, slowly, right? And I keep on getting these spiritual awakenings. The first one I like to share is that my brother said, hey, you'd be the best man at my wedding. And, you know, it's really meaningful to me because I never, you know, like, I hurt him. And, you know, I was able to be there for him and be not screw anything up, right? I was able to go, you know, stand up there next to him, and he's my best friend. And, you know, the next one that I had was, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, things will happen. There's a powerful quote in the big book that says, as long as we perfect and enlarge our spiritual, program, then we'll be able to, you know, survive these certain high and low spots. Don't quote me on that, but it talks about things happening in your life when you're sober. So, like, I've lost jobs, people have died, my family members have died, friends have died, and I've been able to walk through it. The first time I lost my job and I got rehired, and they put me in the liquor department at Vaughn's. And, like, I worked there for 2 years. It wasn't a problem because the obsession was gone. Alcohol and drugs are not my problem. My problem is my mind. It centers in my mind. And, like I said in the beginning, it was my solution for a long time. Alcoholics Anonymous is my solution today. And, you know, I did that job. I moved up. Eventually, you know, I lost that job again. You know, I ended up here, actually, in Santa Maria. But I'd gone through terrible relationships as well, and the thing that helped me out the most, really, in my recovery was H&I. So I was doing like maybe one or two a month, and I was going through this horrible relationship where she was taking advantage of me and I was taking advantage of her, and it was not good at all. And so I started doing... I bumped up my service work to like seven. I would go do H&I seven times a month, and that's when I met my fiance today, and you know she's pregnant with my first child, and that's something that like, and I'm also raising her child as well that she had with someone else. And that's just something that I would never, like if you were to ask me, hey, do you ever think you'll get married? And I was fully content with being, you know, having AA and just living in Santa Barbara and just being totally fine doing that. And now I'm like, you know, it's been like two months, and I'm up here, and I would have never thought that would happen. I never thought that I'd get married, have kids, have the family. I'm doing stuff like I'm going to gymnastics, taking the daughter to gymnastics, doing stuff like that, and doing stuff like this as well because it keeps me sober. You know, there's the circle and the triangle. Unity, recovery, and service. So the unity is like us. If you look at it like a three-legged stool, like we're the unity, like the fellowship and all that, and then you have the recovery, like the big book studies and like the program of action and the service helping others. So if I only do like one of those things or two of those things, and the stool will fall over and like I'll eventually go out. Like I if I don't grow, then I'll go. The next stop will be death for me. But that's what I do today. Is the service is really, really important to me. It's rocketed me in this fourth dimension. I've gotten a lot of wonderful things out of it. I love my life today, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hated my life. Absolutely hated my life. Now I absolutely love it. And, you know, I'm just so grateful to be sober. I'm going to be getting married soon, and this is just things that I just never thought that would happen for me. So, I mean, what I ask for the newcomers is get a sponsor, go through the steps, and your dreams will come true. I promise you that. So thank you for letting me share.
Good job, Daniel. Let's give him another hand.